From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in the Castro Fillmore District.
Bernal Heights.
Oakland, California.
Coming up, Californians passed Prop 30 to fund education. Now what?
It won't have any effect this year in terms of additional money for programs. It will stave off the cuts which would have occurred.
Then we explore how budget cuts have affected the judicial system.
You need judges, you need courtrooms, you need court reporters, you need bailiffs, you need courtroom clerks. That's what's needed for a court hearing.
And Beninois superstar Angelique Kidjo graces the Bay Area with her music and her heart.
Try to reach out to people. Try to build a bridge. Be the person of light, not the person of darkness.
Africa's premier diva today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. This election season, possibly the most talked about ballot item in California after the presidential race was Proposition 30.
California stands to gain $6.8 billion per year if Prop 30 passes.
If you talk to educators, they say it is the most important measure on this year's ballot.
Others say this is just another attempt to raise taxes.
Governor Brown taking a victory lap tonight after his controversial tax increase. Proposition 30 is approved by California voters.
So now what? Where does this money go and how will education truly be affected by it? Joining us to discuss that is John Fensterwald, editor of EdSource, an online K-12 and community college news site. You wrote that on November 7th, when Democrats woke up, it was like they'd wished for a pony on their birthday and instead found a horse with a giant bow around its neck. And you were referring, obviously, to the passing of Prop 30 and kind of waking up to this new reality of new Democratic supermajorities in both the state assembly and the Senate. What do those things equal for education in the state? What do those two things mean for education?
Well, immediately, it won't have any effect this year in terms of additional money for programs. It will stave off the cuts which would have occurred if Proposition 30 had failed. But for this year, it won't provide any money that schools will see in spending. And that's important to understand because the governor has decided to pay off some late payments to schools. Schools are getting paid about $10 billion late, about a year late, and so that's creating real cash problems for schools. So the governor has decided to begin using the first $2 billion from Prop 30 to start paying off these late payments. And so in order to do that, there won't be any additional money this year, but in 13-14, having paid off the $2 billion, there will be that potentially available for schools, and that's a significant amount of money.
So that is the timeline, then, that we should start expecting more money in the 13-14 academic year, fiscal year?
Let me put an asterisk, in the fiscal year that starts in July 1st. Let me put an asterisk on that because I think one of the big discussions that the legislature will have in the coming year will be whether to continue paying off some of that late money, the deferrals, or whether to send this money back to the long-suffering districts to restore programs and rehire teachers. There will be some additional money from a recovering economy, so there may be a way to strike a balance and do both, which I think is what the governor wants.
So for this immediate coming year, people just pretty much have to be patient.
Yes, that's right. There were some districts that budgeted on the assumption that Proposition 30 would fail, and they were doing it very conservatively. And so those districts can cautiously, having saved money, they can start to restore some programs. Los Angeles Unified, for example, the board decided this week to reinstate a 180-day academic year, to reinstate the five days that they had cut. So districts will, each district will react in its own way. Some districts will say, we're going to keep that money that we saved and look ahead to next year and then restore things gradually. Mm. Other districts budgeted with the assumption that Proposition 30 would pass, and they're very lucky, and it did.
Now let's go to the other part of that birthday present, as you mentioned in your article, the new supermajorities in the State Assembly and the Senate. What does that mean for state education funding?
Yeah, I think right away it won't mean much in terms of, say, new taxes. I think the governor's made it very clear in the president pro tem of the Senate and Assembly Speaker. But now that it has a two-thirds majority, they can, in fact, pass revenue, maybe redefine what a fee is, you know, sneak some additional revenue in that way without worrying about the Republican minority. They can also override the governor on some issues, though that's not expected. And they may do something, for example, one of the things we could expect would be to put on the ballot for voters to decide whether or not to lower a parcel tax from requiring a two-thirds majority to a 55% majority. And Democrats have been wanting to do that for years, but they never could find enough Republicans, couldn't find a Republican to support that. So now that they have a two-thirds majority, I think you're going to find that that's probably one of the first things that they'll do.
So then, does this all mean, like, really, really, that the days of teacher layoffs and class cutting and tuition hikes are kind of behind us?
That should be the case. And again, let me state that this year could remain very difficult for some districts. And I wouldn't be surprised, even though with the passage of Prop 30, that some districts may go insolvent. Not many, but not certainly as many as if it would have happened if it had failed. But districts are still trying to recover from years about 10% less in real dollar cuts over the past 5 years. And some districts that are still in trouble may have difficulty over the next year or so. But I think really looking ahead 4 or 5 years, assuming the economy continues to recover and there's not a major crisis in Washington January 1st over sequestration, they call it, you know, the fiscal cliff, things should be stable and things should look ahead. The governor is projecting that as much as $2,500 per student in increase over the next 4 or 5 years. That's substantial. And we've heard those promises before, only to be upset by economic recession and other things, or the legislature could steal some of that money and put it into other purposes. But at least that's the way it looks today.
That's John Fensterwald, editor of EdSource, an online K-12 and community college news site. So how do you think the Prop 30 funds should be used in your district, in your school? Share your ideas for the money on our feedback line. Leave us a message at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Education is an area that was hit hard by government budget cuts. Another area that was hit hard but not talked about as much is the judicial branch. Governor Brown and the legislature cut $350 million from the court system this past fiscal year. In response, courts across the state have had to reduce hours and lay off staff. In San Diego, San Bernardino, Tulare, and Fresno counties, whole courthouses have had to close down. That means people who have civil and family court proceedings, that's things like restraining orders, custody cases, and divorce, will have to travel further, wait longer, and pay more to use the legal system. The cuts have struck a nerve with judges. Last August, they came together and rallied for funding restorations at a judicial council meeting. Here's some of what they had to say.
Courts are starting to hit the bottom. Now, this isn't about judges. This is about the people we serve.
I have lived through two separate murders, suicide, on the steps of the family law courts in two different decades of the court.
Layoffs from Kentucky to Oregon, layoffs in California, layoffs across this country, and the judiciary finds it increasingly difficult to carry out its constitutional responsibility.
Those were the voices of David Rosenberg, presiding judge for Yolo County, Cheryl Ellsworth, presiding judge for Riverside County Superior Court, and W.M. Bill Robinson, the president of the American Bar Association. Here in the Bay Area, Contra Costa Superior Court has said it'll have to close 6 courtrooms by the end of the year. And in San Francisco, residents may lose access to one of the only places they can get help navigating the legal system without paying for a lawyer, the Superior Court Self-Help Center. KALW's Nicole Jones has more.
The line of people outside of the San Francisco Superior Courthouse spans the entire block of McAllister Street, all the way down to Polk.
Tons of people in line.
Very long line.
It's growing longer every minute, actually.
Most people in the line are professionals, attorneys, court staff, and jurors who will spend their days shepherding people through the legal system. And then there are the people planning to navigate that system themselves. People like Anthony Travis.
Unfortunately, that's how the only way I can get it done is to take off of work, but it's worth it. That's where I pay at, I guess. But that's okay. I don't mind doing that than paying a lawyer thousands of dollars to do the same paperwork that they're going to do.
Travis is waiting for the Self-Help Center, a place that gives him and other city residents a chance to represent themselves in court. Volunteers and pro bono lawyers help them fill out paperwork for things like custody or divorce cases. Travis says he started using the center just a few years ago.
I got eight kids, and so I done went through the system a lot here. Child support cases, mama trying to take your money, and you know how that goes. The case ended up in my favor, and I won. And it saves a whole bunch of money.
Like around tens of thousands of dollars, especially in court cases that drag on for years.
I've hired about 3 to 4 different attorneys. I've spent about 25 to 30 grand in that. And I never got the resolution that I needed.
Louisa Eagleton started her custody battle 4 years ago. She has to use a self-help center about once a month.
They look over my paperwork, they review, they make sure everything is the way it's supposed to be before I file. That way there are no issues come the hearing date. So I love it.
Going it alone isn't a rare thing. Last year in San Francisco, 85% of the parties in divorce and domestic partnership cases represented themselves. On average, the self-help center sees around 140 people a day. Repeated budget cuts, though, mean they have to squeeze more people into fewer hours. That means less one-on-one time for everyone.
We have 3 triage stations right now. I only have 1 triage worker. Our triage worker basically is trying to assess whether the customer is here in the right department.
The Self-Help Center's director, Judy Louie, says they're open just 3 days a week now, down from 5. But more and more people keep coming in.
I think the way the economy is, we see a lot of folks who do not qualify for fee waivers. They do have a decent income, but because of foreclosures or debt or, you know, lawyers who have student loans, and there's a lot of people facing hardship who cannot afford the average attorney retainer fee. So they do come in and do their own self-represent, and so they want to come in and find out how to do that on their own.
The court's presiding judge, Catherine Feinstein, has been watching the courtroom budget crisis unfold in front of her. She also sees people doing things on their own, but she says it shouldn't have to be that way.
We don't have anybody to put the piece of paper in the file. Unless and until we're able to replace those folks, that's not going to change.
And Feinstein says the public doesn't even see the worst of the cuts. For example, judges are no longer getting a free copy of the Civil Code of Procedure, a book with all the California statutes that judges and lawyers depend on. Feinstein says it's like sending a priest to work without a Bible. At the same time, she says, the demand for court hearings keeps increasing.
When the legislature is in doubt about what to do, it creates the right to a court hearing. And that's fine, but you need judges, you need courtrooms, you need court reporters, you need bailiffs, you need courtroom clerks. That's what's needed for a court hearing. And if you're not going to provide the resources for a court hearing, don't create the right to one, because people aren't going to be able to avail themselves of the right.
Back outside the courthouse, the line for the Self-Help Center is finally starting to move. And Louisa Eagleton is eager to finish her paperwork.
I'm going to be here a long time, and I really hope that this isn't cut, because if it is, you know, I probably have enough experience to where I know what to do, but I would feel really awful for others who haven't a clue, and they wouldn't have that help.
Holding her stack of manila folders, she walks inside to get that help while she still can. In San Francisco, I'm Nicole Jones for Cross Currents.
We'd like to hear your experiences with the legal system. Are you going to be affected by these court closures? And how important do you think it is that counties are being forced to cut down on their legal services? Share your opinions on our Facebook page. It's KALW News. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. And now for some artery, cultural coverage that's très africaine. Rhys Ehrlich presents this perspective on jazz.
Vocalist Angélique Kidjo warms up during a sound check at the Montreal Jazz Festival. Kidjo was born in the West African country of Benin. She grew up listening to traditional music, but was soon influenced by American rhythm and blues singers and jazz artists. She started composing at age 10. She wrote about political topics starting at a very early age.
When I first heard about slavery, I cried. I was mad, like you don't even imagine. My first song that I wrote was a very hateful song. And my dad said to me, not in my house. You're going to rewrite this because hate is not the response to this. Whatever you do in your life as a musician, try to reach out to people. Try to build a bridge. Be the person of light, not the person of darkness, because it does not bring us anywhere. That's what the colonizer and the slaver want us to do, to stay in that dark hole, pit hole, and not see the light.
Kidjo can sing a mournful ballad or an up-tempo, funky tune, but she always draws on her African roots. She had a hard time growing up and says life is difficult for all young women growing up in the third world.
You're born in Africa, a girl, you don't have an identity. You belong to your father that can marry you to another man. Basically, you're an object. It is not important as having a boy, and I was fortunate to have a father that refused those stereotypes. The society, how can you fight the whole society?
Music was Kidjo's escape from such traditions. She learned from the local musicians who were both instrumentalists and storytellers. Unlike stage performers, they were respected.
Traditional musicians that tell our history, that pass on who we are, have more importance than a performer on stage. I leave school, coming back home, and people will spit on me, throw sand and stone at me, and call me prostitute. Sometimes it was really, really painful. But when Miriam Makeba arrived, I'm like, whoa. Geez, she made it. I'm doing it too. I don't care what kind of name you gave me.
South African singer Miriam Makeba emerged as a major talent in the late 1950s because she combined traditional African rhythms and melodies with Western pop influences.
Pata Pata is the name of a dancer. We did down Gauteng way. Everybody starts to move. As soon as Pata Pata begins to play,
Sakupuka Sakupega,
Sakupuka Sakupega,
Sakupuka Sakupega,
hear Makiba's impact on Angelique Kidjo in this song, Mbube.
La mama, hey, 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 we move mama, that's la mama, hey, hey, hey.
This is Reese Ehrlich with a perspective on jazz.
Angelique Kidjo performs at UC Berkeley's Zellerbach Hall on November 17th. You can hear more of Reese Ehrlich's Perspectives on Jazz. We'll show you where at KALW.org. And now for another edition of My Mixtape, where people bring us songs that mean something special to them. Take a listen.
Hi, my name's Alexandra Victoria. I live in San Francisco. And the song I want to talk about today is Faygo Baseball 2011.
Grand Slam, I'm thirsty, man. We're back in the lead again. Faygo, remember.
Last week, I was having a terrible day. You know, nothing was working out. My anxiety levels were through the roof. And I finally got home that evening. And I did what I normally do when I feel bad, which is go on the internet and look at stupid stuff to make me feel better. So I was looking into the Insane Clown Posse and reading about Juggalos, but what this research led me to was the discovery of a soda pop called Faygo. Anyway, reading on their Wikipedia page led me to their website, and the first thing I heard was this song, so I definitely recommend checking out the website, if not all of their songs. They'll definitely brighten up your day in some way, I hope.
Faygo was there.
You've been listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Julie Kane, Audrey Dilling, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Alyssa Kapnick, RTM's Konohovs, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Erica Moose, Stephen Short, Panina Eilberg-Schwartz, Anna Sterling, and RJ Sloan. Today's show is engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. Thanks to City Car Share, which provides an alternative transportation option for our reporters. They're online at citycarshare.org. And thank you. We are listener-supported radio. You may have heard that KALW is hosting a public remembrance of our longtime announcer and all-around cultural diplomat, Alan Farley. Well, several musicians associated with KALW will present music at the event. Wesla Whitfield and Mike Greensill, David LaTulipe, Eric Wayne, and Sarah Cahill, who you're hearing now. The event is next Monday at the Green Room of the War Memorial Building at San Francisco's Civic Center from 5 to 8 p.m. It's free, but please let us know if you're coming so we can make proper arrangements. You can do that by visiting our website, KALW.org, or by calling us at 415-841-4121, extension 3515. That's 415-841-4121, extension 3515. And now leaving you with the music of Sarah Cahill for Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba. Thank you.
On Cross Currents from KALW News, we're not shy about taking on the big stories.
I can't imagine a cow working out in the city. They're just too big.
Well, maybe not that big.
But I think probably you could do sheep.
Oh, most definitely. We go digging for stories wherever we can find them. Some pop up in the tiniest of places.
We are still less than a speck on a moat on the skin of an elephant.
Or in the furthest recesses of the Bay Area, like the Santa Cruz Mountains.
That's actually not a lion on a hunting rampage. It's a female looking for love.
In all the wrong places?
I am like a rabbit. I am replete with ideas, and I am just hopping around, ready to do it.
So are we on Cross Currents. Take a walk on the wilder side with us, weekdays at 5 on KALW 91.7.